The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's Pear.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 150, a big episode in the history of this podcast. I'm so excited, and I know someone else is excited. Oh, I'm Chad Dotson, by the way. Someone else that's excited is my co-host again this week, Bill Lack. Are you excited, Bill?
I am so excited. I'm about to pee my pants.
Oh, wow.
And I have a new nickname, remember. It's Reds fan with an attitude.
Oh, that's right. Our Reds fan with an attitude. Bill Lack. That's right. That was the name that emerged from our big meetup there a couple weeks ago at Great American Ballpark. So
when I was accused of trying to sabotage the Q&A.
Yeah, by bringing up Brandon Phillips at every possible moment.
I did everything I could do to not mention his name. It was kind of like Harry Potter, you know, that he shall not be named.
Oh, yeah, that's Brandon Phillips in your world. So, well, anyway, we're here. I want to talk a little bit about, 150 episodes is a lot, and I want to go a little bit deeper into Red Leg Nation, all that, and talk about that with Bill, because Bill's been around since before the beginning of time, but also before the beginning of Red Leg
Nation. Older than dinosaurs, man. Yes. Older than dinosaurs.
That's right. But some big news out of Reds, Red Leg Nation, I guess, out of Reds land today, which is that the Reds announced officially that Brian Price is returning for another year and his entire coaching staff. Basically a one-year contract with an option for 2018. What do you think about that decision, Bill?
Well, I think the coaches have just been offered, to come back. I don't know if anybody's agreed yet. I can't imagine they won't, but, at least that's what I read. We've talked about this a couple of times, recently when you and I have talked on here, and I think it's a natural progression. This team is fighting to become competitive again, and who's going to want to come in and take over a team? Whoever has this team now is not going to survive to the next time that they're good. And if Brian Price would not, if they would have not brought him back, if this would have been the end of his career as a Reds manager, it probably would have been the end of his career as a major league manager, I think. And if they come back next year and they're decent, I won't say competitive, but let's say 500-ish. He might have a chance at a job in the future, but if he'd have went out on his sword at the end of 2016, I think his hopes for any future major league manager's job would have probably pretty much been over.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I don't have any issue with the Reds doing this, with the idea that next year is not going to be the year they're expected to compete for a playoff spot. I mean, if everything went well, we can always hope, but I'm not going to bet the ranch on the Reds being in the playoffs next year. I'm of the opinion that there are plenty of things to criticize Brian Price for, but I'm of the opinion that he is basically an average manager. I think people tend to, since we watch Brian Price and watch the Reds every day, I think people tend to want to highlight some of the deficiencies that we see over and over and over without realizing that a lot of the screwy things that Price does in terms of his bullpen and getting guys in the lineup. Those are things that 98% of the managers out there do. you know, Reds fans end up hating every manager who's not named Sparky Anderson. I mean, that's just, and even at the end of Sparky Anderson's tenure, he was run out of town. Although I don't necessarily,
I don't think the fans had anything to do
right,
with that.
Right. That's where I was going with that. But, so with Price, you know, he is what he is. I'm not going to defend him and say that he's the best manager for the team over the long haul. I just think his ability as a manager is downgraded in a lot of people's eyes because they're watching him every day and seeing him do crazy things when almost every other manager in baseball would do those same things. Now, you know, on the other hand, there are plenty of reasons that they could have gotten rid of him if they wanted to. But I'm with you. What's the harm? What's the point in firing him? You know,
right.
If you can find somebody to take the job that you are sure is an upgrade, well, okay, maybe you can commit to get him to sign a 3 or 4 year contract to see the end of this, what they hope is the end of the rebuild, through to a time when they might be competitive, and that's sort of looking at it as a rosy picture a little bit. But that's just my whole thing is, well, you know, why not? At this point, what's the point in making an investment in somebody else unless you're sure you've got the next Sparky Anderson?
Yeah, and you're fairly convinced you're ready to turn the corner.
Right.
And the other thing, and you mentioned that, you know, we kind of micro-pick at Brian Price because we see him every day. I think we do that with our players, too. And my guess is I've never been a fan of another team or been around – you know, lived in an area where people were fans of another team. My guess is everybody does that about the people that they see every day.
I'm sure of it.
You know, I mean, look at Adam Dunn. Let's bring up Adam Dunn.
Oh, let's do it, please. Yes.
And we talk about that all the time, is that so many, you know, not only the broadcasters, but so many fans and you know, people you and I both know, dwelled so much on the things that he was not good at, not enough on the things that he was good at. So, I mean, it's kind of the same thing.
And that's the same thing you do with Brandon Phillips too, right?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, you can say that Price is not the worst manager in baseball without that being a compliment about Brian Price. He's certainly not the best either. And if I had my opportunity to get Joe Maddon, for example, in here, yeah, I'd dump Price on his can and go get Maddon. You know, but who else is out there? I don't know. The Reds... if they've done any due diligence, they may not have at this point. I hope they have to see who might be available and who they think could be an upgrade. But there's so many factors that go into this. They may believe that Price is doing a great job in the clubhouse, too. We don't have any knowledge of that. You've not heard or seen too much that would lead you to believe that, but he certainly hadn't pulled a Dave Miley in the clubhouse either, it doesn't seem. So, again, I'm just, okay, they bring in Price back. That's fine. Whatever. You know, I'm not excited about it. I probably, if I'm in charge, that's what I would have done. 1 year deal. If he does, you know, hey, what if they win 88 games next year? Well, you know, okay, maybe Price will have shown that when he starts getting players on his roster, which he's not really had, that he can be an effective manager. More likely they're going to win, you know, 78, 80 games next year, something like that. And then they'll start a serious search for the guy who can help them take that next step.
So. I couldn't agree more, and I, you know, and who that is, who knows, you know, is it my, you know, is the next guy a Miley, or is he a, you know, a Sparky, or a Lou Piniella, or a Dave Bristol? I'll take a Dave Bristol.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, Bristol's the guy that was sort of pushed out because he wasn't the new guy's man, you know, he came in, he was the manager when Bob Housen got to Cincinnati. And I think had a pretty decent reputation, and just Housen wanted his guy, I believe, is what happened there.
Yeah. I mean, he only won 89 games the year he got fired.
Well, ouch. yeah, if Price wins 89 games next year, he won't get fired, I bet.
No, I bet you he'd be all right.
Well, unless like with Dave Bristol, unless they can find Sparky Anderson. You know, that's why Bristol was sent packing, because they found a Hall of Fame manager to replace him.
Yeah.
So... yeah, Brian Price is back, and something you said there was interesting to me, and I tried to expand on it, and I didn't really do a very good job, but a lot of it depends on, I think you said, where they feel like they are in this rebuilding process. And, man, that's like the question to me. Are we close? I can look a certain way and say, yeah, they're a couple players away from being a really pretty good, maybe at least a wild card competitive team. On the other hand, they've lost 90 games, more than 90 games in back-to-back years for the first time since 1934. So,
And the other thing that and this bothers me maybe more than anything, and it kind of comes out of a Doherty column that was in the Enquirer this week, is did they really answer any questions this year?
I think they did.
Do you? Well, do you think they answered any pitching staff questions?
I think that we know that Lorenzen and Iglesias are extremely good major league pitchers. Now, there are more questions were created
about
that.
But you don't know where they can be used.
Right. Those questions weren't answered, and maybe more questions were created, especially with Iglesias. I think that we learned that Di Sclafani is probably a number two starter going forward.
Yeah, we kind of figured that going into the year. I think that was more reinforced than.
I think that we learned, in my opinion, that Brandon Finnegan can be a starter.
I'm not sure that the Reds would agree.
He started more games than anybody this year, and
That's because he was the only one that stayed healthy all year.
Right, but I mean, he stayed healthy. He was able to pitch a bunch of innings, and he was reasonably effective for a 23-year-old.
My guess is that what the hell do I know?
That's a good question.
Is he one of your five next year? Do you think? You know, and maybe they did, but they didn't answer any questions on Stevenson.
No,
they didn't answer any questions on Cody Reed.
No, I would agree. Except that with Cody Reed, until he came to the big leagues, he was just as dominant. I mean, he was making all the progressions until the very second.
Oh, absolutely. Anyway, absolutely. But.
Well, what more do you want out of him?
To say he struggled in the big leagues would be like saying, I need to lose a little weight.
Yeah, but he was 22. I mean.
I'm not.
I know you're not giving up on him. I know you're not giving up on him, but.
But what I'm saying is he had no success. What did he have? One decent start?
Yeah, maybe. I think you're right when you're looking at it in the context of were questions answered about that guy. No, I mean, I think we've still got questions about Cody Reed. We still definitely have questions. I think I have more questions about Robert Stevenson now than I did last year.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I think.
Because he does not seem to be progressing.
No, he does not. He does not. And whatever the reasons are for that.
I mean, you know, you can believe the stuff you read, which makes you sound Homer-esque in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Not listening, blah, blah, blah. And whether it's true or not, who knows? You know, and I hope it's not true, because if this kid, you know, is his own worst enemy, that's a shame.
Well, there's, you know, we're premature in making that call, but that's a very good comparison in the sense that these are two guys that were first rounders, highly, highly sought after prospects, and have been on the fast track. Both of them were from day one, and they start to get a little bit of move up in the system a little bit, where things aren't as easy anymore, and then run into a brick wall. But my opinion is, you know, Homer Bailey, until he got injured for the last 2 years, had finally turned that corner. Is Stevenson going to get there? I don't know, but I think there certainly are more questions than answers with him.
And I think offensively, you've still got questions. You got the Devin Mesoraco question. You've got, you know, the Scheibler. You know, I think they still got questions about Scheibler. I think they still got questions about Duvall, even though I think they deny that they have questions about Duvall.
Well, yeah, but it's hard to, you know, for a guy that was supposed to be a platoon left fielder, hit 30-plus home runs, 30-plus doubles, 100-plus RBIs.
Yeah.
You know, the questions I think that have been answered on the offensive side are, number one, I think it is clear to me that Eugenio Suarez is a legit player when it comes to who's going to be in the infield for the next good Reds team. He's, you know, his age 24 season, up and down, certainly. As you would expect, but he showed me the way he improved throughout the year. He showed me, gave me every reason to believe that he is right in the mix with anybody else they have to be in the infield over the next few years.
Do you think they need to find someplace else for him to play?
I think it may end up being second base. But no, I think he can play third base. I think he can play third base. But his defensive metrics at this point are that he's an above average third baseman. And this is the first year he'd ever played it as a professional.
I agree. I agree with the first, that's the first year he ever played it. And in defense, and you know I have problems with defensive metrics.
Sure, sure.
And to the eyeball test, he did not look like an above average defensive third baseman.
I think the last 2 months, I would agree with you up until the last 2 months. When I, to my eye, admittedly, that's, you know, I don't want to judge people based on that because what do I know? But to my eye, he improved immeasurably over the last couple of months. It seemed like to me night after night he was getting a little bit better. And maybe that's not the case. That is what the metrics showed, and maybe I'm seeing that because I saw the metrics switch up with him a little bit. He was just awful early on. But, you know, when the only time you've ever played third base is a few games in the Venezuelan Winter League, it's tough to learn that on the major league level. So I'm not sold on him as a third baseman. I'm not willing to bet the ranch on him as a third baseman, but I'm also not willing to say that he's going to be not going to be able to handle it with the glove. And I still think
I think Tucker Barnhart answered some questions about himself this year.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I think he proved. I don't think Tucker's a starter.
Okay, you're right.
But I think he is a quality backup.
I think what he showed this year is going to permit Tucker Barnhart to play about another 12 years in the big leagues.
Yep.
I think he's going to have a long career. He can get on base, he's shown. With the glove, he's always been great. Yeah, I think this is the year that he didn't answer the question, is this guy a starter? Because I'm with you. I don't think he is a starter long term. But he's a guy that can play 40% of the time. And I think
if he can keep his OPS plus somewhere around 90 and play the defense he plays,
he'll have a job as long as he wants it.
Yep.
Somewhere.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think of David Ross a little bit, except he's a better defensive player, maybe not quite as much power and not as good a hitter as David Ross, but a guy that's going to have a job somewhere.
Yeah, he may move around a lot, but he'll be bringing home that paycheck with a lot of zeros in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that question was answered. I think the question about even though he's not really gotten the opportunities that he should have, but to me. Answers. I've got lots of answers about Jose Peraza this year. I think this is a guy that needs to be a starter full time next year. I think he's shown that. Where he's going to start, I don't know because they're still going to make those decisions about Cozart and your buddy Phillips. But to me, Jose Peraza, we know way more about him now than we did before. And what we know now is that this is 23-year-old that is ready for the big leagues.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned on his on base percentage because it's so. Batting average based.
Yeah, it is.
It concerns me. But the kid looks like he can just flat out hit.
He looks like he can square the ball up and a little bit of pop, surprisingly. But if he can handle the glove at shortstop, you know, he doesn't have to be an elite. He doesn't have to be Barry Larkin with the bat,
right.
You know, to be a valuable player. And I've seen some signs that make me believe he can handle shortstop as well. So, you know, I think we still got a lot of other questions that need to be answered, but I think you can say some questions were answered and some were things got a lot cloudier, I guess is the way I would put it.
How about Billy Hamilton? Did he answer any questions this year?
Let's talk about Billy Hamilton.
I mean, I know he probably did for you.
Yes, in the sense that I was very concerned because I wasn't seeing a whole lot of progress. And after this season, we still got questions. Is he ever going to be able to stay healthy? And I think that's a huge question when it comes to his future value to this team. But when he's in the lineup, you know, his on-base percentage ended up being right around 320, somewhere there. His defense was gold glove worthy. I hope he wins the gold glove.
You think he will?
I worry that he's, you know, not playing here the last little bit's going to hurt him. But, yes, I think he will, if I had to guess. And so you got a gold glove center fielder that with his crazy speed at age 25 has now bumped his on-base percentage to 320, you know, would hopefully improve more. I think I'm much, much less concerned about center field now than I was 365 days ago. I think that's the way I'd put it.
Okay. I'll buy that.
I'm not willing to, you know, hand him a 5-year contract yet, but you know, I'm not as nervous about him as I was. I was extremely nervous before this season.
You know, you have to wonder, too, with the Mesoraco injury problems, whether the Reds would be gun-shy about trying to buy out people's arbitration years and stuff at this point.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you do have to wonder about that until they're and Mesoraco is an interesting comparison because, you know, catchers are always, it's scary. Catchers get hurt. Billy Hamilton's a guy that's not been able to stay healthy, and so much of his value is wrapped up in his legs.
Yep. And he, I mean, he's just such a small guy.
Right. He's slight. What if he gets hurt? He's going to be worth a lot of money maybe at some point, but I'm not sure he's going to be a good enough risk for a team like the Reds to take. I could see that happening.
I mean, and don't this isn't a direct comparison, but it kind of reminds me a little of the quandary with Eric Davis.
Well, they're the exact same type of player. You're right, Bill.
Well, I mean, they're you know what I'm saying, though. I mean,
absolutely.
If Eric Davis hadn't had injury problems, Eric Davis was on a Hall of Fame trajectory.
Eric Davis was an Inner Circle Hall of Famer if he hadn't had the injury problems. I believe that 100%. No, you're right. Sort of similar builds. You know, Hamilton's not.
Yeah, I mean, Billy's a lot smaller than Eric Davis.
Right.
But it's the same. You know, center fielders having a hard time staying healthy. I mean, their tools are not completely different. Eric had tools that were unbelievably over the top. You know, there hasn't been 10 guys playing baseball that have the tools Eric Davis does, I don't think. But, well, that's probably exaggerating a little bit, but that's not many.
No, it's not far off.
Yeah.
And both banging into walls and diving all over the place. I mean, you know, we forget sometimes, but Eric Davis was just a crazy defensive player, just all out and got hurt a number of times. And so, yeah, I mean, I think on the injury front, that is a comparison. And that's the one thing I'm concerned about. I think Billy Hamilton, if you could tell me Billy Hamilton's going to play 160 games each of the next 5 years, yeah, I'd sign him. I think he's a very good bet to continue improving. And even if he doesn't get much better than what he is now, he's a player that can create value for your team. But I'm not.
And I do want to give a shout out to one of our September call-ups that I've said for years should have been given an opportunity is Steve Selsky.
Yeah, yeah.
He's done a nice job since they brought him up.
5 for 5 the other night. That was fantastic.
You know, he's getting on base. You know, again, tied almost completely to his batting average. But you know, he's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball all over the place. I'm happy for the kid. You know, yeah. he's one of the kids I saw playing Dayton. So I have a soft spot in my heart for those guys that I knew there. You know, I didn't know them, but you know what I mean. The kids that I saw at that age. And I've always felt like, you know, he was a victim of his draft position. No matter what he did, he had a trouble overcoming his draft position because he was like a 33-round draft pick or something like that.
I saw an interview with him the other night after he had that 5 for 5 game, and they asked him about that. And he said, well, you know, I wish I were drafted in the first round, but in some ways it might have been one of the best things for me in that I knew I had to work and earn everything I ever got because nobody was going to hand anything to me. And that's the way it's been. He probably has been put behind the eight ball a little bit because of that. But yeah, he's a guy I'd love to see. You know, I don't have any problem with him sticking around and getting some time on the bench for the Reds, and you can put him in, and he can put the bat on the ball and can play a little bit of defense. And yeah.
Well, it reminds me of the catcher's name ran out of my head. The guy that we both really liked that they traded to Tampa a couple of years ago.
Ryan Hannigan.
Reminds me of Hannigan. They fought their way up through the system, and nobody was invested in them. So they had to do it all on their own, and they didn't get second chances.
Right. Hannigan was undrafted, free agent. Yeah.
Right.
Actually, I started to mention Hannigan a moment ago when we were talking about Barnhart, because I could see Barnhart having a similar type career arc, because I think Hannigan's going to end up playing. He's still with Boston, I believe. I can see Hannigan sticking around for a while. But, yeah. So there we go. The Steve Selsky question was answered this year, Bill.
And yes, he is with Boston.
Yeah, so there are a lot of questions still remaining, but if there weren't, you know, we'd be ready for a contending team. I do think the Reds will be significantly improved next year, unless there's injuries. That's always the – if they hadn't had injuries this year, I think they would have lost, you know, only 85 games or something.
Well, I mean, they played much better once they got high. You know, they got healthy on the pitching staff. But you know, and this wasn't a question going into the year. But let's also give a shout out to Straley.
Oh, goodness gracious!
I mean, what a phenomenal year for a guy that was on the scrap heap.
Yeah, I said it on Twitter last night. It's my favorite story of the year. This guy was They got him for free the day before spring training ended, basically, or the day
he,
after.
He was this year's Alfredo Simon.
Oh well, yeah, yeah, without the character issues.
Well, he didn't have those, you know, when they got him from, you know. Anyway,
you're right, but you're right though. He comes out of nowhere, and he's not been an ace. You know, some of his peripheral numbers aren't perfect, but man, this guy has pitched all year long. He's pitched well all year long. He leads the team in quality starts, and they got him for free. You know,
yeah. I mean, pretty much, despite the fact that he gives up a gazillion home runs,
right?
He kept them in the ball game all the time.
Yeah, and he's just he's a good interview because he's so thankful just to be here and be getting this opportunity finally. And I'm a huge fan of Dan Straley. I'm not here to tell you that he's the next second coming of Johnny Cueto, but I think it's my favorite story of the year, even over the Duval, who's, you know, had this big breakout, which is fun. Straley's just 20 quality starts. I think they picked that guy up off waivers basically right after spring training ends. And if somebody had told me he was going to get 20 quality starts, I said, you're out of your mind. So that's great. Great story. I'm glad you mentioned Straley. I'm always willing to talk about Dan Straley.
Yeah.
So, quickly, what do you see out of the Reds next year? Just a couple sentences.
If they can improve by 5 to 10 games, that'll be super.
Yeah, I think they can. I think they can. I think that they are still on a pace to be competitive, however you want to define the word competitive, in 2018.
I think they'll be competitive for a wild card spot. I think it's going to be a lot of years before anybody's competitive with the Cubs.
Yeah, I know. We've got to get out of this division.
Can we apply for a transfer?
Yes, please. Yes, I need to scout out which division we want to go to. All right. Well, that is the Reds, and you know, we've sort of tried to put them to bed a little bit this year. It's been a rough season, but there's been some interesting things as well. But I did want to talk before we put this podcast to bed here. I wanted to talk a little bit about the podcast and about the website and some of the history behind it, because this is episode number 150, and we've had some hiatus here and there where we weren't recording or whatever. We've been week to week here for a while now, but 150 episodes, that seems like a lot. And you and I have been here. I'd like to know the number. I don't know what the number is, but most of them, and it's been fun, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, it really is. And you would think we'd find something better to do with our time, but. The amazing thing to me is that some people are actually listening to these things.
I know. Well, a big part of the reason why people started listening, I think, was you have grabbed some interviews with and some really in-depth discussions with some really fun names over the years.
People have been very kind to us.
They have, haven't they?
They've been extremely kind to us. I was just looking at the list, and one of the fun ones was the. And this is the second one when we did with Greg Rhodes, that you and I did with Greg Rhodes down at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was a great time.
I don't know how many times Matt Klinker came on.
And remind everybody, Matt Klinker was what we called one of our spotlight players back in the day.
He was our longest spotlight player.
Yeah.
We thought we were going to get a guy to the big leagues. We were hanging in there with Matt.
Yeah, he came. He made it to AAA, and we thought we had a chance there.
Yeah.
We've
had, you know, but I mean, everybody, Chris Welsh has been on multiple times. Devin Mesoraco has been on multiple times.
Tucker Barnhart's
been on multiple times. Chris has probably been on next to Matt. Chris has probably been on more than anybody, I would think.
That's what I was going to say. I did want to special thanks to Chris Welsh, who's always been so generous with his time.
Chris is such a big supporter of Red Leg Nation. He's just such a great guy. Some of my favorites was the one I did with Tom Browning was a lot of fun. Talking to Jim Maloney was awe-inspiring to me.
I bet. Yeah.
And the two-parter we did with Freddie Norman was pretty great too.
Love that. And all of these are available, by the way. They're all still out there. If you go to redlegnation.com and click on RN Radio up the top, every one of these episodes is still available. These interviews are not really dated, not time-sensitive. They're evergreen. Some of these are great. You need to go back and listen to that Maloney one. The Fred Norman one was fantastic. I learned things about him that I just didn't know.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time looking through his records and doing some research on him before we sat down and talked on the phone that day. And the other guy that's been on multiple times was John Fay. I want to thank John.
Absolutely. Faye has been on Sounds like
Mark Sheldon's been on a number of times.
Yes.
But anyway, the Fred Norman thing, I had forgotten how good he was when he came over to the Reds. I mean, how good he was, you know, with the Reds. He had been struggling in San Diego, and I said this for years you have to be an old guy like me to remember when Freddie came over. But I think the Reds traded for him because they couldn't beat him.
Probably.
And he came over, and somebody he was mentioned the other day in one of the posts on Red Leg Nation. And somebody and whoever wrote it said that, you know, that Freddie threw a shutout in his first game with the Reds, and I went back and corrected him and said Freddie threw a shutout in his first two games with the Reds, and went into the ninth inning of the third game and gave up a home run to Ron Say to break a shutout in his third game. So he almost threw three consecutive shutouts for the Reds, and that was while pitching for Sparky Anderson.
Yeah, right, Captain Hook. And a lot of people wouldn't realize. Go back. They need to go back. Y'all need to go back and look at his numbers. He really was. People don't remember how effective he was there for a time.
He should be in the Reds Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we're gonna work on. He's one of a couple of guys that we need to start.
We've talked about that on here. There's a number of guys that have been shortchanged when it came to their Reds careers.
Yeah, my guy's Reggie Sanders, the guy I want to.
Yeah, that's the other one. And I think he's an obvious guy too. And I think he's a very obvious inductee.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, it sounds like we're sort of wrapping up the podcast. This is our last episode, but it's not. It's not.
No, can't get rid of us that easily.
That's right. But yeah, you mentioned Faye and Sheldon, both very generous with their time. I remember I got to speak with Joe Posnanski, probably my favorite sports writer, after he'd written the book about the Big Red Machine. That was fun. And I don't know, some of the fun I've had has been just you and I talking about whatever nonsense comes into our heads. And also all the other guys that have been on with us, Jason Linden's been on with me a lot lately. Joel Luckup's been on a bunch of episodes.
Doug Gray.
Doug Gray and I've done a bunch of episodes. Chris Garber. Co-author's been on a bunch.
Have you talked about the book on here?
I can see that you didn't listen to the last episode.
No, I'm sorry. I'm a little little tardy.
Yeah, we did. We talked about it. Very excited about the book that's coming out in the spring that Chris and I wrote.
Have you wrapped up the everything?
Well, yeah, we submitted our manuscript. Yeah, they're going to come back to us, I imagine, with some suggestions and maybe editorial comments, things like that. But yeah, we have submitted the actual manuscript.
So you'll be like by summer next year, you and Chris will be like rolling in like John Grisham money.
Oh, listen, we're going to be big time. We're going to be big time.
You probably won't even talk to us anymore.
Well, not you anyway.
There is that.
I've been trying to keep from talking to you for years. Something else I remember just before I let it escapes my mind about the podcast, and I do want to move on past and talk about a couple of other things in terms of the history of this whole project. But I remember early on we got the audio from when Adam Dunn called into Marty Brenneman's, into the banana phone. Thing. Yeah, called into the banana phone and said he was Adam from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And that's one of the funniest things. I may have to put that back up into the podcast feed again and for everybody. That was fantastic. Adam from Milwaukee. We played that. And a couple of big sites linked to us when we did that because I don't even remember how we got the audio to that.
I don't either, but I remember it was up. If there's been a Reds player with a better sense of humor than Adam Dunn, you'll have to prove it by me.
And yeah, I agree. Yeah, he's been, and we got a really funny quote of his in the book actually that I'm not gonna let out and make you go buy the book.
There you go.
But we had a really really funny quote from him that I didn't remember. A couple of funny quotes actually. Now I'll think about it. Yeah, one chapter of the book is devoted to Adam Dunn.
only one chapter?
Just one. Yes. But over the years we've had some of our favorites that we love talking about. Dunn was one of them.
Got a chapter on Adam Dunn. You got a half the book on Billy Hamilton.
No, Billy Hamilton only gets six chapters. Wayne Krenchicki gets a chapter. No. So anyway, it's been fun, Bill. I look forward to keeping on with the with these podcasts, and I appreciate you taking time for us because you used to be the voice of reason, but now you are what was it again?
Reds fan with an attitude.
Reds fan with an attitude, exactly. All right. I also wanted to talk, if we could, about redlegnation.com, the site. And I thought this, our 150th episode, would be a good spot for us to kind of talk about where it came from. And most people these days may not know that sort of the genesis of what it, they were unrelated, I guess, but the guys that all of us sort of were around at the beginning of Red Leg Nation, we all met up on the Reds listserv list, the email listserv that you started when?
1994.
Tell us about that, if you will, because people may not really understand these days. Some people may not understand what a listserv is.
Right, yeah.
Back then, it was great.
It's still out there. I mean, in fact, the Reds list is still out. It's still floating around out there, even though I couldn't tell you the last time anything was posted to it.
Still active.
In the mid-90s, I ran the first Jimmy Buffett listserv list. And it was a huge thing. And I started this Reds and Bengals list, I think it was after I started the Buffett list. I can't remember which one was first.
Yeah.
But I started a Reds and a Bengals list in 1994. And what these listserv lists are, for those that aren't familiar with them, is you sign up to these things. And then if you post something to it, it goes out to everybody else on this list.
On email, right, over email.
Yeah, via email. And you know, this one, and we had, I don't know, 150 people on the list or something, I think, probably at the high water mark. And we were, I don't know, during the baseball season, you know, on a good day, we'd have 40 or 50 posts, I would think.
It was a really active discussion, and it was, in depth. I mean, it was,
yeah. And then as the internet evolved, you know, it became kind of yesterday's technology.
Yeah.
As blogs and these kinds of things became more and more prevalent. And then you started Red Leg Nation and asked me to come on board, and it kind of usurped the listserv is kind of like telegraphs and telephones, you know?
Well, I don't know. I'm starting to feel like the website's becoming the telegraph, because who knows what the next thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You never know.
Twitter and everything. So, but you know, I remember the listserv, and I don't remember how I wasn't there at the beginning of the listserv, and I don't remember how I came upon it. But I remember being at college, and my 1 year at college, my dad basically forced me to get an email address. I didn't know what an email address was, didn't care. This was, you know, mid-90s. And so I went and signed up for one, and at some point I figured out, hey, you know, there's this listserv list out there. What's this deal? And so I signed up for it. And you talk about an education into just baseball and baseball strategy and baseball statistics. And a lot of people talk about how Bill James's abstract, people that grew up in the 80s maybe, Bill James's abstracts were instrumental in them learning about statistics and just about baseball. To me, that was the listserv, because I remember spending 2 weeks early on. I mean, I can still remember sitting in my dorm room at the University of Virginia talking to a bunch of these guys about baseball and spending 2 weeks arguing that obviously there's no better statistic to judge a pitcher, no better statistic than wins.
Wins and losses.
Clearly, that's the most important thing. That's what you're out there to do, win and lose. But eventually, I was shown the error of my ways, gently, although there were some passionate arguments. And
sometimes less gently than others.
Yes, but it was an eye-opener to me. I can talk to all these guys who, kind of like me, are just obsessed with this baseball team. And I didn't really have a whole lot of friends that I could talk baseball with in that sort of obsessive way, too obsessive probably. And so it was just, like I say, it was a revelation for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it was my first exposure to anything analytics or sabermetric. Yeah.
Oh, me too. Absolutely.
And it was definitely a huge eye opener. And I thank, you know, and I, you know, the people that educated me at the time, and I'm still learning, you know, every day what some of these numbers mean and how they're, you know, where their value is, but other than defensive metrics, but
right, which you'll
know. But you know, it was a small and became a very friendly group. You know, we used to do Reds games,
yeah,
every year. You know, we'd get together and, you know, kind of like what we just did, and you know, and you get a bunch of guys together, and guys and girls, because mm-hmm. there were women on the list. There weren't a whole lot, but there were some.
Some that were very active, yeah.
And it was a good time, and I think it created some of these others. You know, I don't know if any of these other Reds blogs, you know, were people that were on the list. I honestly don't know. My guess would be the Reds reporter guys were all too young.
yeah, those guys are too young. That's a
yeah, they're young.
yeah, we're the old guys.
I'm the old guy.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I was trying to soften the blow there, Bill.
That's all right. I can handle.
Yeah, you know, Chris Garber, like we said, he was on the listserv back in the day.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of some of the names that
Dave Lowenthal
was a guy who professor and you know, Dave emailed me about something about the Reds not too long ago. I thought, oh man, this is a blast from the past because I hadn't talked to Dave in a long
time. There was a guy out of Louisville, Steve Price. Yep, Steve Price.
Yeah, and Steve wrote for us for a while.
And Steve wrote for us for a while. Yeah, with Red Leg Nation. Mm-hmm. Miles Sussman.
Oh yes, yeah, yeah. Gosh, there's some names, and you'd see them in your email. Actually, I couldn't wait. It's the craziest thing. I couldn't wait to go check my email. What was everybody talking about today? Or yeah. if you're in the middle of some particular conversation, you know, you couldn't wait for everybody to respond to it. And it was the best. And yeah, around 2005. So you know, probably I was on the list probably about a decade before Red Leg Nation started. And so you started at 94, I guess you said.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a long time, and
You know, and you came to me with this idea of that you were considering. I don't even think you'd said you were going to start, and you were concerned that I would be offended or think you were stealing the thunder of the list or anything like that. And I appreciate the consideration that you gave, you know, what I had done and what we had all, you know, kind of brought along. And it was just the next evolution in the Red Leg fan base, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I've been concerned the whole time that I helped bring about the demise of the listserv, because obviously, like you said, that was our first conversation about it. I was at a point where I was looking to expand my writing a little bit, and thought I might like to try to write for you know, about the Reds, sort of in a more public fashion. And I thought, well, you know, blogs are becoming a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can start one of those. And so I did. I talked to you, and I think I talked to Chris early on, just gauging what you thought, and actually your advice. And I appreciate the fact that you gave me permission to go ahead and do it. And, you know, I guess probably the listserv was going to die out at some point anyway. What happened?
Yeah, like I said, it's the train and the airplane, you know.
Right.
You know, like, you know, it's the next evolution of what you need. And I appreciated you bringing me on board, you know, with Red Leg Nation. I don't write like I used to, you know, and I, God knows I couldn't write as well as the guys we got right now. I mean, they're just.
Well, me either, but. No, but yeah, I mean, you know, we talk these, the original gang at Red Leg Nation, you know, you're one of the original gang. Chris was there at the very beginning.
Yep.
Steve Price might have been I'm not sure if he's at the very beginning, but shortly thereafter. So there, you know, there were some guys that, and that was the listserv list was. That's we got together and.
Yeah, a lot of the guys that started with Red Leg Nation were carryovers from the Reds listserv list.
I think all of them were. At the very beginning.
Yeah.
And eventually brought on more people, and as we gained a little bit more of an audience, and we got a great group now. But
yeah, absolutely.
I never would have guessed back then that we'd be sitting here, you know, 11 years later, 11 and a half years later.
150 episodes later.
And 150 episodes of the podcast later. But, you know, I could not have even wrapped my feeble mind around the idea that, you know, here I am in the mid-90s going away to college, and I meet this bunch of guys on the on an email list, and, you know, here we are. 2 decades later, and you know, we're still friends, still get to talk to you, not as often as I'd like, but fairly often. And you know, they did this project with Chris, and it's really strange.
Well, I mean, and think about it, you know, from there, you write for Cincinnati Magazine now, you got this book coming out, you still got Red Leg Nation, you know, and as you're a part of, and you never know what, and this is, you know, what I'm trying to teach my son who's starting, you know, his life and getting out of grad school. I mean, you don't know what direction you're your life is going to take you.
No, it's true. I never would have guessed that we'd still be talking about the Reds in a different form than we did back over email all those years ago when I first met you. But yeah, it's kind of fun to look at it that way. And you're right. Who could have known where we'd be? And you know, I hope Red Leg Nation's around for the foreseeable future. I'm still having fun with it. Now that I've sort of dipped my toes back in and gotten more involved, I took a little bit of a break myself. It wears me out. But this team wears me out. But anyway, you know, I think really you're the godfather of Red Leg Nation. Basically, this all came from your creation of that listserv list. And Chris Welsh was on that list for a while, wasn't he? Wasn't Chris on the?
Oh yeah, Chris was on the list. Yeah, he. I mean, I think he did more reading. I don't remember him posting very often, if ever. But he read what was said and what was out there.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, he was. I remember you telling me at one point because I don't know that he ever posted, but
yeah, he would. But, you know, he would contact me back channel or something like that.
Yeah. So that was a fun time. I'll never forget sitting there. I remember. I'm in my dorm room listening to Tom Browning when he broke his arm. Remember, he threw that pitch and mm-hmm. broke his arm there at the end. And I loved Browning at that time, one of my favorite players. And my first thought was, I got to jump on the email to talk about this. You know, I got to get on the list. Or what are people saying about this? You know, whereas now you'd go to Twitter or whatever. You know,
right? The instantaneous,
right. But that was the first time that the technology sort of interacted with my enjoyment of baseball. You know, I thought, there are people all over the country that I can talk to now about the Reds. So let's talk about it. So
yep,
that's a pretty good memory, and we're doing things a little differently now, but still having fun with it, I guess. So
absolutely.
Well, I think we've kind of hit all the high points there. Unless there's anything else you want to say about the. About the listserv there, Mr. Godfather.
No, nothing else to say. I got one question for you before we sign off.
Yes, Don Corleone.
Where does Joey Votto finish in the MVP ballot?
I think he finishes, I want to say top three.
I would say top five. But
I think definitely top five, and I think top three might be pushing it a little bit. But what, he finished second last year? They lost 98 games, second or third. He's definitely top five. But
came in third last year.
Yeah, to me, he's number one, Bill.
I know. No, Billy Hamilton's number
one. Okay, all right. Well, 1 and 1A, let's say that.
Who wins the American League MVP?
If it's not Mike Trout, I give up.
Bet he doesn't.
I bet you're right, too, but... I'm not willing to say any other names because there are no other names that have any kind of a claim on that.
I don't know what I was watching the other day. It was probably something on Major League, and they said you can't play for a late-paced team and be the MVP.
Yeah, somebody tell Andre Dawson that. it's ludicrous to me, you know.
I'm not disagreeing with you. And Mike Trout is just, oh my God.
Oh, this is a guy. We talk about watch every one of Joey Votto's at-bats because, you know, Reds fans don't get to see this very often. Trout's a once-in-a-generation talent, maybe even more. I mean,
he's in his, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, his fifth full year in the major leagues.
Yes.
And he's never finished lower than second in the MVP ballot.
Yeah, right. And he should have three or four MVPs already at age, what, 25. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah,
it's kind of the way I feel. We're going to shift gears over into basketball. But it's kind of the way I feel. I'm worried here about the way I feel about LeBron James in that, you know, LeBron James really ought to go to Derrick Rose's house and Kevin Durant's house and Stephen Curry's house and take his MVP trophies back that he earned in three of those years. I'm afraid that's what's going to happen to Trout is, he's the best, but, you know, oh, this other guy's the flavor of the month. Let's give it to him.
Well, kind of like what and kind of the same thing. They're talking about Julie Louis-Dreyfus should not be in the Emmy category anymore because she wins every year.
So?
So, yeah.
There you heard
it. If you want to take it from me, beat me. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, they need to give it to Mike Trout. Mike Trout, also known as the Julia Louis-Dreyfus of the American League.
There you go.
All right, Bill. That was
fun,
buddy.
And we'll wrap it up on that.
Yeah, let's end it there. As always, go to RedLegNation.com every day for coverage of the this our beloved Cincinnati Reds, who we've been talking about for far too long, and we'll continue. You can check out at RedLegNation on Twitter. In terms of the podcast, go to iTunes and subscribe. Leave us a rating, leave us a review, and tell your friends if you can. That helps us. It's funny, the number of subscribers are going up every week, and I really do appreciate that because we love talking about the Reds for you guys. Again, as Bill and I have commonly said, there are a lot of things you can do with your time. We have no idea why you would download listen to us, but we very much appreciate it. Am I right?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, for Bill Lack, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.